Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Gearhead podcast from Wired and Ars Technica UK. I'm Wired UK's Jeremy White, product editor, and I'm joined by the hirsute Mark Walton of Ars Technica UK.
Hello.
And Wired's Liat Clark as
well. Hello.
Hello. Okay, today is a very special day in tech. Any guesses why?
Is it...
And we've been living under a rock for the last 2 weeks. It is, of course, the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, people. 10 years.
If you visit the wired.co.uk website,
you're in there with the plug already. Oh, my God.
Are we doing plugs? Because I'm gonna do ours. We've also got our own 10th anniversary features, one of which I wrote. So feel free to go...
Absolutely right. And get on there and check these out. That's the problem. So, okay, plugs out the way. It is the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. Now... That is quite something. If you really do think back and go, like, actually, we've only had this technology in our hands for a decade. That's something that we take for granted. And normalization happens so quickly these days. We all get used to new tech so quickly. But this actually took a tremendous leap forward for technology. There was a smartphone before that. The LG Prada phone came out.
God, I remember that. It had a touchscreen as well.
That had a touchscreen as well, but I don't think it had the rubber band. It didn't have the pinch.
No, it had none of that.
But it was a full, touchscreen phone. It looked very pretty. It was
a really good
effort. Well, it was a good effort.
I thought it was crap.
It was a good effort considering there was nothing else out there that.
Yeah.
I think that's hard. That's harsh. You're judging it by today's standards.
No way, because I had a Sony W950. Which was a Symbian touchscreen phone and had a little stylus with it. And I had that ages before, and that was also kind of crap. They were all kind of crap, let's
but
be honest.
These drove Apple to do what they did.
Absolutely.
So, Tony Fadell, he was there looking at the LG.
As we got an interview with them, but basically what happened was that Apple got into bed with Motorola to produce the Rocker phone.
That was awful.
This was the iTunes phone. So even though it could actually carry more than 100 tunes, they limited it to 100 tunes, and the interface was absolutely dreadful. And this was Apple's response after the phenomenal success of the iPod, which actually accounted at the time for 50% of the company's global revenue, just that one device. But they could see, as Tony Fadell told us, actually, he said you could see with 3G coming, the ability to download on the move, and people would not want to be carrying around the two devices. So they felt they had to produce a phone. Now, they didn't want to do it themselves, so they got into bed with Motorola. And a lot of people at the time said, you've made it deliberately terrible because you were working on the iPhone and you knew it was coming along.
This never crossed my mind. This was hilarious. Jeremy actually asked Tony Fadell this and he took great offence,
He certainly was keen to point out that that was not the case. In no way did they make the Rocker bad because they knew the iPhone was coming. He took great pains to point out that because the Rocker was so bad, them realise that they had to produce their own handset.
I'm pretty sure they had some say in it. Like, we know they had the say in it, there only being 100 songs.
That's right.
And then they were like, oh, look at our beautiful model that can have endless supply. So but I'm calling.
I get why they went with Motorola, though. I mean, they were huge at the time. The Razor was like a design icon.
Jobs loved the Razor.
It made sense, right?
I had a Razor too. Yeah, Jobs gave the Razor his design seal of approval.
Was it the Flip one? No, I had a Flip one from them as well. Oh, I remember feeling very cool.
I miss the Razor, man. I want to go back to it.
I don't at all. Anyway, so all of this happened, and this brought about Apple's determination to bring about the iPhone, and basically say
it's basically
this
an
is
iPod.
This is the thing. There were two different. There are many different origin stories for the iPhone. It clearly didn't start one place within the company. However, there were two main camps. There were there was the software camp, guys trying to make a device with a touchscreen that basically ran a Mac operating system. And then there was Tony Fadell's camp, the iPod camp, which were trying to make an iPod that was also a phone. So with a central click wheel that you would use as an old rotary dial system, and then use that system as well for the click button for text entry too.
But that first one you were talking about, was basically a precursor to the iPad.
Yes,
they were making a tablet.
They were making a tablet in response to Microsoft tablets, which Jobs thought were dreadful. Yeah. And he said, "I want to show them how to do it right." And so that's why they were working on the tablets. So could we possibly turn this into a scale it down to make it such a small?
I think that
device?
Was it, wasn't it? It was they weren't sure that multi-touch could work at such a big scale at that point.
That's right.
So there was that interview with Scott Forstall the other day. Yeah. I don't know if you saw it, but he was saying that one of the anecdotes he came up with was that Jobs was incensed by, I believe it was a Microsoft employee's husband or wife, I can't remember which way around, that kept bragging about tablets. Kept saying how great they were, and eventually just went, you know what, we're making.
We'll show you how to make.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. Yeah. Microsoft and Apple's.
Yeah.
It's been really quite something. But when you consider that was 10 years ago and actually came out today, that how much it's come on since then, that from that first version, which when it came out, it got not very good reviews.
They were kind of lukewarm. I remember everyone was like, "It's not very smart for a smartphone." I believe was most of the response.
Exactly.
To that.
Yeah. So
tech just eating their own words.
TechCrunch. Yeah. TechCrunch gave it a kicking. They said, "No, this is a not very good device at all."
Oh god, we should have done that story. They didn't all the people that said this was going to fail and.
That's a great idea. I mean, it's kind of ragging on your competitors.
That's right.
Kind of makes you look like a bit of
as
a
I
dick,
just
but,
did.
Yeah.
but basically, so all of this stuff has happened. And all of this is culminating in all the news you're reading about and seeing this week. So check it out on Ars Technica UK. Check it out on Wired UK. But we've got all sorts of other things coming up as well. So we're going to recap over the announcements of WWDC, because we haven't talked about that since you spoke to us last on Gearhead.
That's right.
And also a chat with the best-selling author and a former Wired alumni and founder of Cult of Mac, Leander Cahy, about the launch of the original iPhone, because he was there.
Oh, my God. He was there. I've also got something special for you guys, which I've knocked up, which is it's an iPhone quiz. So to test your knowledge of 10 years of iPhone, I hope you've prepared. I hope you've got it all stored up there.
I've prepared by never owning one.
This is where we embarrass ourselves, right here. Anyway, let's kick off with WWDC then. Let's talk about that, because I suppose the major announcement at WWDC was finally Apple's admission that they have to enter into the home assistant race, even though they're calling it a speaker, is HomePod. HomePod. So what did you think of HomePod, guys?
Oh, my God. Why?
Well, yeah.
Well, it's $350. And I think, like you explained to me before, they were pitching it as a high-end speaker.
Yeah.
Right?
So, which
like
is,
Sonos.
Then just buy a speaker that has voice capabilities, which they all will have now, thanks to Amazon and everyone else doing it.
I mean, it's the classic.
What's the point?
It's the Apple markup. I just don't understand why you'd buy this over the Alexa, which has a far better ecosystem right now, or Google Home, which, as we discussed before on the first episode about digital assistants, is that it's got much better search capabilities.
Yeah.
Like Siri isn't good at neither of those, like the smart home stuff or the
but
search
that's why
stuff.
They're literally selling it on the music.
Yeah.
And because, great, we have this ecosystem called iTunes. Great, fine, okay, but anyone who is interested in voice technology and music probably has an amazing sound system set up in their house that can be hacked or can, well, now everyone has, you know, Amazon skills that you can use on these devices. So why would you replace your amazing sound system built into your walls with a semi-attractive speaker? A non-fugly.
It looks like a toilet roll.
I mean, but this is what they're selling it on. It's like, we're high design. It's like, I mean, Alexa, who cares what your little voice assistant looks like, really?
Well, also,
some people
as it's speaker, I mean, the speaker has got I do, yeah. Speaker's got some reasonable stats. You know, it's 7 beam-forming tweeters, each with its own amplifier, blah, blah, blah.
In one corner of your room.
I know, but it's not very big at all. It's only, as I said, it's only 7 inches high. The thing is, with that sort of money, with $350, you're straight into... You know, that's more expensive than a Sonos Play 3.
Okay.
The new versions of the Sonos speakers, as well as the other multi-room speakers, will all have microphones in them that will link to digital assistants.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to talk to them. I mean, it's a bit clunky at the moment because now you need to have a separate, say, Alexa device that is also linked to your Sonos account.
They're working on it, though.
They're going to bring that out. You can't use it at the moment, but they are going to bring that out. But obviously, the new version of the speakers... will have a microphone.
But the Play 5 does have a microphone.
The Play 5 has a mic. Not a very good one, but it does have, and it's certainly no way near as good as the microphone in Alexa. Yeah. But it's a microphone nonetheless, and you will be able to use it. And so the new speakers, it's pretty safe to say, from Sonos will have microphones in them as well, just for this reason. So that price point then puts it direct comparison with the HomePod. What's going to have the better sound performance?
They don't have the skills or the experience or the reputation of a Sonos to say that we are the high-end speaker.
Sonos isn't exactly high-end, but get five-star reviews.
You wouldn't associate Apple with your sound system.
That's exactly what they want you to do.
Well, that's what they want, but it's a bit late, Apple. I'm feeling a bit sad in this conversation because I feel like iPhone anniversary, we should all be really upbeat. Really, when I'm looking, listening to us discuss this,
is exactly how people talk about the iPhone when it first came out.
This isn't pioneering. They've done it. It's not even, LG Prada. They've had like 2 years of competitors rolling out their products. They should have rolled out something with a unique selling point beyond we've got some subwoofers or whatever it is is in there.
Well, and I think it depends on. So personally, I'm not particularly tied into the Apple ecosystem.
No.
I have a MacBook that I use for work, and I love that, and it's great. For work stuff, love using OS X, but otherwise I use an Android phone, and everything else is just...
Same with me.
There's nothing...
Mac at work.
There's Android nothing linked phone. To it. I don't use iTunes, I don't use any
I
of that.
Don't I don't want anything linked to it.
Right, exactly.
They're irritating. I get my iCloud bloody prompts every single day. I don't want more space.
Well, because they want you to subscribe.
Yeah,
that's
they
why. They want your money.
But take no for an answer and they won't.
If you are in that ecosystem, right, maybe this is hugely compelling.
Oh, yeah,
maybe
for those people that queue outside the street, of course it is. But, for the diehard fans, this is an easy win for them. But it's a bit, 10 years on, I feel like, you'd kind of accept more. And when you think the iPhone, that really came from saying, screw you to your competitors. And they just have failed on this front,
I guess this is the thing. I think it's perfectly acceptable to say that the iPhone, when it came out, has governed how mobile phones look and behave since that point.
Course.
It was landmark yardstick technology. You probably can't say the same for the HomePod, whether they're losing their game or whatever, some commentators have said that.
What would you say about the Apple Watch? Which camp would that fall into?
Well, what I would say about the Apple Watch is it legitimised the smartwatch market, because before then the smartwatch market was struggling terribly. People just weren't interested in the slightest.
I still don't think they are.
They're not really interested now, but they're more interested than they were before.
Right.
And Apple, because Apple really, really wants it to work.
Yeah.
But that brings us to another point about WWDC as well, which was, where was the watchOS stuff?
You had watchOS. It was there.
Very little of it.
Oh,
and
my God.
We watched a clip from
Toy Story that they got really excited about some Toy Story collaboration, and that was pretty much all I remember from the watchOS.
That's true. So, I mean, this supposedly is one of their major pillars of hardware.
Yeah.
And very, very little was announced for it. So I'm wanting them to move that on and move it forward. I wear one,
What would you want, though? What really can they do now that would sell it to you?
Well, I mean, I'd certainly want the form factor to be improved. I would certainly want it to be thinner, and I certainly want it to be able to do a little bit more than it does.
So those are the problems. Those are actually the problems why smartwatches and wearables are not where everyone envisions them to be, because everyone wants to be in the market because they know that one day that will be the future. And the fact is that we're not there yet because we don't have the battery life. We don't have the slimness. It's not compatible with our entire house yet. Maybe it will be once, Alexa or whoever takes over our home. But that's the point. They're laying the groundwork, and they can't have the acceleration that they had with the iPhone, which was getting a dramatically improved device every year.
Well,
and we've seen it all stall.
There was always that USP with the iPhones. There was a killer selling point to it that made it either it was easy to use, or it was that you could actually browse the web on it or something like that. There's nothing about any smartwatch that makes me go, oh yeah, that's so good.
I need that in my life.
The fitness stuff is great if you're a fitness fanatic, but then people like Fitbit. They do that better and cheaper.
You see that much more frequently.
Absolutely.
And they the iPhone did get dramatically slimmer over the years, one would replace theirs, frankly, I think.
There's only so far you can push the watch, isn't it? I mean, I'm wearing a massive watch, which is not a smartwatch.
The point is, it's going to be in your clothing one day or whatever, and you don't know.
Maybe. Or, unlike, embedded.
Or in your skin. Yeah.
God, we descend into sci-fi territory.
It's not sci-fi. It will be.
I will defend the Apple Watch on its battery. I will defend it on its battery. Okay. Its battery is really good.
Way longer than a day.
It does. About a day and a half, I would say, which is more than enough if you're going to, you know, want to charge it up. That's not anything. If we move on from the Apple Watch.
Yeah, I think no one's convinced here.
If we move from the Apple Watch. I won't convince you over here.
There are some positives.
There are some positives here. They did actually announce some really cool stuff. Mark, what else did they announce?
So they had some new iPads, which aren't the most exciting thing in the world, but they had a new A10X Fusion chip inside, 6-core CPU, 12-core GPU, very fancy stuff. Essentially, that means fast performance all round. The really interesting thing was that they've got these new screens in them, which are variable refresh rate screens. So this is a technology that's been around in PC desktops, particularly gaming desktops, for a while, where essentially if you play a 30 frames per second video, the screen will refresh at 30 frames per second.
Okay.
But what's more important is when you get into higher refresh rate stuff, it results in a smoother picture and, in theory, saves battery life. So you don't have to refresh the screen as often, you save battery.
Right.
So it's very cool. It's for people that are, for game stuff, for people that are into the iPad Pencil and using it creatively, it results in, you know, smoother graphics, smoother
feel. Now I'm having flashbacks to WWDC.
Yeah.
Was this all the kind of virtual reality creators kit?
So there was a little bit of that.
That was the bit that I found interesting.
I mean, Apple doing VR, they're very, very late to the party. And to be honest with you, it was kind of a half-assed sort of effort. They sort of felt like a token VR thing, you know? It was just that they did it and everyone else is miles ahead. You've got Vive, you've got Oculus, obviously, and you've got Android, who've been doing this for a long time.
In terms of, they were trying to sell it as whoever's creating the games out there, you've got your incredible screens here and set up.
Absolutely.
And it sounded a little bit more impressive for that, rather than what they're actually doing in terms of what it will look like.
No, for sure. I mean, so VR does depend on high screen refresh rates, but they don't have a headset.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and this is the thing, is everyone else has got a headset. Apple going, you can create VR games on iPhone and they'll work in something like a Google Cardboard or similar.
Yeah.
But there's no device.
They clearly want to partner with the HTC Vive, though, which they had a picture of on stage. So they wouldn't do that unless there was some sort of affiliation between them, even if it's just tacit.
I mean, it doesn't make much sense. You know, there's VR support in OS X now. That's great. But most of the VR applications run on high-end PC hardware that Macs don't support. Mm. They don't support interchangeable graphics cards, and the graphics cards are the biggest, most important thing for VR. So as a platform, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Unless you're a developer that's so ingrained in the Mac, you have to use a Mac to do your development. I just don't. Strange one for me.
Oh, so there's still no positives, really.
Well, no, going back to the iPad, the 10.5 inch Pro iPad. I have the 13 inch and also the 9, and it was a case. It really was a case of the Goldilocks scenario, where one was too big and one was too small. And I'm testing the 10.5 right now, and it really is a nice size. The keyboard, I wish I could have the keyboard from the 13 inch size. You know, that's a beautiful keyboard to write on.
Yeah.
But so my only criticism is that the keyboard, even though it's a full size keyboard, I do still feel a little cramped as I type on it. But it's a great, great size to carry around. It's got, I don't need to carry around my laptop anymore. And certainly, bring another thing from WWDC, you know, when the new iOS 11 comes out for the iPad, with all the extra applications, the file storage, the drag and drop, for example, and the increased dock as well, the increased number of apps you can have in the dock, and also the new notification center, the saved pairings of apps on the screen, you know, all of that. All of that basically makes, for my usage of a laptop, it redundant.
Really?
I wouldn't need to carry around my MacBook.
I still feel
MacBook
like I'm miles away from that.
Yeah,
I don't feel like a tablet is quite, it just doesn't do enough, you know? I can't do Photoshop on a tablet, for instance. Well, you can.
You can.
But it's not, it's not as quick. It's not as easy. You know, if I've got a mouse, I can just
But most people, you know? Don't delve around in the intricacies and the difficulties of Photoshop. Yeah. You know, like you would, and I know you do it. You're very good at it. But most people are using it for their, you know, for email, for Excel, for Word
day-to-day
documents,
work.
for day-to-day work, and for surfing the web and watching videos. And they've always been okay at doing that. But if you wanted to do lots of document work and writing on an iPad, you know, the double clicking the home button all the time to go between, you know, this is all of these things, and some transferring files and all that, you know, all of these things will make it a strong contender for your average user of a laptop.
Do you use it with an external keyboard?
I use it with the smart keyboard that comes with but I also use the Bridge keyboards, which I think are really good keyboards.
Right.
A Bridge with a Y. And they make aluminium keyboards that look like Apple have made them. In fact, actually, I showed one of these keyboards to one of the UK Apple staff once when they first came out.
Yeah.
And he went, what the hell's that? And I said, it's a company called Bridge. You know, and he went, really? And then it looks like one of our products. I mean, it was you know, like,
that's high praise.
You know, it wasn't. You know, if you get close in and feel the edges, for example, you know, there is a difference in quality. But from an outside point of view, it looked like it. And every time I used the Bridge keyboard with my original iPad, people would always come up and say, what is that? What is that?
You've probably just sealed their fate. And there's a lawsuit in the working.
Well, no. They've been operating for years now, Bridge, and they do a really good product. They do a really good product. But the smart keyboard... You know, people don't like it because some people don't like it because the angle that you have to, the screen is forced to have it, and you can't control that angle. But I quite like it, actually. I've got used to it. But anyway,
I'm not there. I'm not there yet. I'm more interested in some of the pro level stuff, which they also had at WWDC.
They did.
Apple's faced a lot of criticism recently about neglecting who are probably their most vocal fans. You know, the graphic designers, you know, the film editors, those guys that love Apple stuff, use it all the time. They've had nothing. I mean, the Mac Pro hasn't been updated for, I can't remember how many years now, but a long, long time.
Well, since the dustbin.
Yeah,
since
we've had the dustbin design, but it was more that they hadn't even updated the internals of it. Like, it was the same internals that you paid the same price for until very recently. They had a slight update. But the thing, they're working on a new Mac Pro. They're not showing it off yet. It'll be cool. But what they did have was a new iMac Pro, which is in stealth black. And is just pimped out. It has. I'm going to nerd out a bit here.
Oh,
so excuse me.
It's all about the stealth black, isn't it?
Right. The black color's cool.
Not that space gray.
Right. Exactly. But this thing has got Xeon processors with 18 cores, brand new Radeon Pro Vega GPUs, which aren't even out yet on PC. It's going to have 4 terabytes of storage, up to 128 gigabytes of ECC RAM. 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, you can drive 2 5K displays, it has high-performance RAID, pretty much everything you want for the princely sum starting at $5,000.
Yeah. Is it worth that to you then? Because you seem to be drooling over it.
These are super high-end specs, right? I don't know
what... This is for professionals. This is for... Right. Yeah.
Exactly. They'll pay for this stuff. I mean, you know, when pros buy a computer, it generally has to last quite a long time. It's the IT life cycle, right? So it's 3 or 4 years. So I think... It looks great. My concern is whether they'll be able to keep it cool or not.
Well, that's what they
It's the same design, right? It's the same design.
Same design, but they did say they've completely remodeled the cooling system.
Yeah, supposedly.
They had a nice graphic anyway showing that.
Yeah.
Whether it works or not, we won't know.
Yeah, exactly. But it's super cool. I mean, I love stuff like this. And, you know, it's the sort of thing that I will probably never, ever own and really don't have much use for.
Oh, you sound so sad. I'm sure we can get you a test run.
iMac Pro review. Yeah, I'm up for that. Yeah. But this coming out in December.
One of the that's what I really liked about it. Space black. What is it? What's it called? That's the
stealth
black. Sorry, beg your pardon. Beg your pardon.
I don't know if it actually is stealth black. It might just be space grey.
It's a rumor we've begun.
That space black. Stealth black. Sorry, that stealth black keyboard and mouse. Now you can only buy those as part of the kit of the iPad.
Yeah, they're exclusive.
They're exclusive to that. But it does actually, it's a full size keyboard with the number pad on it as well, isn't it? Which leads me to the best thing that they didn't announce at WWDC, which was the full wireless keyboard for the Mac.
With a number pad.
With the number pad.
Yeah. So right, that's the biggest thing.
I think that's massively. They massively lowballed that. And I was talking to one of the Apple guys.
Well, I mean,
about
I could see why.
Because I was talking to one of the Apple guys about it, and they said they really, really wanted to put it in, but they just had so much they had to drop something because it was just running over. It was going longer and longer and longer. But I think that's a really cool thing. You know, like lots of people love the wireless keyboards, but you want that number pad there. You do actually want the number pad. This time you've got it. And I certainly will be getting it. I'm sorry, it's a really cool thing.
Got your number pad, guys.
I do want that there. I do want that there. Go on, you mock me as you always do. But I think that's actually a really cool thing.
I don't even use a wireless keyboard. So there you go.
Me neither.
I don't want to deal with batteries.
Oh, bloody hell. Anyway, one of the other really good things that we did, we have been delving into this week with our iPhone reminiscence coverage, is the fact that we got a great writer, Luke, who came in and did a piece on the 10 iPhone mistakes and what Apple actually learned from them.
Yeah.
It was the thing about things like, you know, the debacle of Apple Maps and how dreadful it was.
That really was. Bendgate.
Yeah. Bendgate as well.
I mean, they're still
the holding the phone Maps thing.
Yeah, AntennaGate.
AntennaGate, that was it.
That was it. And the madness that was mandatory U2 music.
The apologies that came were.
I thought everybody was far too grumpy about that.
It was
that.
A bit. I think it made Bono like an overreaction.
I feel like it made Bono like uncharacteristically self-reflective about his ego. So I was rereading his statement, and he was like
a touch of megalomania.
Yeah,
wasn't
and
it?
I thought, oh, okay, you've recognised what the rest of the world has known for a while. So it did that.
But there was,
they've been quiet ever since.
It's true. But I think what was nice about it was the piece is up actually on wired.co.uk, but it lists what's nice about it is you can see virtually in every incident, Apple trying to fix it or learn from the mistake, even if it's down to AntennaGate, which was, you know, or offering when they immediately discounted, when they discounted the price of the iPhone, and the early adopters, the faithful, went up in arms about having to pay over the odds. They said, no, you get a credit.
It's basically a PR exercise.
Exactly. It's a lesson in PR on how to do it.
Yeah.
But that's what's clever about them, do that way. So, I mean, what other coverage has ours been doing for the 10th anniversary?
Yes, we've had a few arsy takes on stuff. So the first one that went up was Apple's effect on medicine. I wrote about how it's affected gaming, which is another interesting one. Before the iPhone came out, I don't think we had DLC in games. I don't think anyone heard of quite of freemium just yet, which is whether you're blessing or a curse, depending on your point of view.
In-app purchases,
those sort of things, which really we have the iPhone to thank for. And for giving birth to various brilliant indie games developers as well, you know, who got their start on iPhone and because it was so cheap to develop for.
We nearly did a piece on that, actually. We nearly did a piece on the first sort of App Store millionaires.
And, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Which is
which
apparently, if you got in at the start, you made an absolute fortune.
Oh, so there were some that I was, when I was doing the research for this, I think Shmuel, I can't remember exactly. They started the company. Within a year, they were $1 million profitable company.
Yeah. Like, well, they launched, how many apps?
They have was a lot.
When the original iPhone launched, it was only like 1,000, or was it way more?
It was less than that when the apps launched.
It was less
launched.
Than that. Yeah. So if you think that, like, globally, the competition now is like mind-boggling, and there's no rhyme or reason.
You can't find anything now,
no,
right?
Exactly.
That question was probably going to be in the quiz later on, I have to say.
But maybe.
He didn't
maybe
give
not,
us an answer there, did he?
Yeah.
So one of the things we have been doing is we've been working with in collaboration with Cult of Mac over this sort of coverage. It seemed a sensible thing to do, and those guys know a hell of a lot about the iPhone. And in fact, the founder, Leander, of Cult of Mac, actually worked on Wired at the time of... He was the Apple reporter for Wired at the time of the iPhone launch and was there at the actual launch. So I decided that I would interview him for this podcast and ask him what it was actually like to be at the process, you know, to be there at the event, and was it as ridiculous as it was? It was an interesting conversation because It goes through the fact that it was, you know, it was referred to as the Jesus phone after that. You know, it was revered. It was in this glass case. There was only one of them there. It was in this glass case, like some sort of artifact from Indiana Jones, you know, with light shining on it. And
Jobs on it.
And it also pointed out that the fact that it wasn't until the iPhone, this is Leander talking, that that it didn't go, that Apple really didn't go mainstream. After this, that's when you started to get Apple reported in the newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, things like that. But up until that point,
even with the iPod,
it was mainly on the in the blogs.
Well,
so
the
says,
iPod is what kicked it off, I guess.
That's right, so, yeah. And there was only a couple of years before then. But this was their real sort of jump into superstardom. Yeah. So let's have a listen to see Leander talk about the madness of launch day.
Back in the day, I was a reporter for Wired here in the US, and I was the Apple reporter. So I was signed up to go to the keynote where Steve Jobs introduced the original iPhone. And I remember it was really palpable. There was a real sense of history. It was, and it wasn't just me. It was, you know, all of the attendees. There was huge, huge excitement about this. This was the hottest ticket in town, and everyone wanted to go.
Was there a, with modern day ones that people know what's coming to a great deal? But how much did you actually know before the launch what was going to be revealed?
The idea that there was going to be a touchscreen phone had leaked out, but none of the details. So no one knew what it looked like. No one knew how it worked. No one knew how magical it would be, how simple and stripped down and transformative it was going to be. There was none of that, but people did know that there was going to be a phone, for sure, and that Apple, you know, at this time, you know, Apple had really been transformed by the iPod by this point, and it was clear that that people were carrying two devices. Cause by that point, a lot of people had a cell phone, but they had a Nokia. Or an Ericsson phone, you know, a dumb phone. And they were carrying an iPod too, so they had two devices. And of course, Apple had tried previously with the Rocker, that collaboration with Motorola, which was a horrible failure, the iTunes phone, which was a horrible, horrible failure. So it was clear that they were going to do a phone, but people didn't really know, you know, what form it would take.
I think there's been some reporting that they sort of deliberately made the Motorola iPod phone bad because they were working on the iPhone in the background. What do you think about that?
They were working on the iPad. So they were working on a tablet that used multi-touch. And I think they had some inkling at that time. But I think the what I'd read was that the Motorola phone really cemented the idea that they had to do it themselves, that they really had to devote the resources to doing their own phone.
Right.
They couldn't do a collaboration with somebody else. And of course, you know, it was hugely complicated. It's quite a very, very different gadget. And I think there were one of the main questions was actually about partnering up with one of the networks. They were really reluctant to do that because the carriers were so horrible at the time. You know, they had all the power. And the handset makers were, you know, utterly beholden to the carriers. And they had to cut all these deals and bend over backwards to pull all this bloatware on their phones. And, you know, the one of the genius things that Steve Jobs did when they were developing the iPhone was to get that exclusive contract with AT&T, and AT&T handed over a lot of power to Apple to do things their way in exchange for exclusivity.
Oh my God. But the going back to the actual day itself, though, I mean, was it, you know, after they announced it, were people going crazy? Was it pandemonium? Was there sort of like stunned silence and like, what on earth are we going to do with this thing? How did it actually play out?
That's funny, because I think there was, you know, they only had one handset on display, which is really unusual at Macworld. You know, normally after the keynote's over, everyone streams down onto the conference floor and they'll have, you know, the huge Apple booth, and you can do a hands-on and check out whatever they'd announced. But this time they only had one, and it was inside a glass bubble, it rotated, and it had this strange glow on it. It looked just like a religious object. It looked like, you know, something from a saint's bone or finger bone or something like that. You know, and people were literally gobsmacked when they came up and looked at it. You know, they were standing there in reverential silence with their mouths open. And people started calling it the Jesus phone. You remember that nickname?
Yes.
So. you know, they really wanted to see it. And of course, you know, the, when Steve Jobs introed it, they sort of really jerry-rigged the whole demonstration. It looked like he had one phone. He was doing all these, you know, he was doing all the interactions. But they, I believe they had five or six phones, and they had all kinds of like tricks to make sure that the demo wouldn't crash. The reason they didn't release it immediately is because they didn't have it ready.
Right.
They had all sorts of problems with the screen and with the antenna. And they needed that sort of 6 month runway to fix all these manufacturing problems. So, but it actually turned out to be a stroke of genius, because in that, you know, accidental genius, because in the subsequent 6 months, the hype grew to such insane levels about the phone that, you know, come launch day, there people were lining up, I think, you know, was it a week or 2 weeks before? Some people were there for 2 weeks, I think, two or 3 weeks. There were professional line sitters. It was a huge media circus and at the store in New York, the Fifth Avenue store, you know, there was like media out there every day, people interviewing about it. It was on the front pages of all the newspapers. This is when the sort of Apple, I think, really went, you know, when I was working at Wired, you know, I was the Apple reporter, but, you know, reporting on Apple, all the rumors and the speculation, that was for the sort of the blogs, you know, and the mainstream news organizations didn't get into that. They didn't get into the speculation about what was going to come up. They didn't report on the rumors. And if you look at it now, it's really odd. You know, like now, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the CNN, all of the major news organizations, the BBC, they report on the rumors, they report on what Apple's going to be releasing. You know, they've become like these fanboy blogs, the mainstream media.
Have.
And that was definitely the turning point, you know, that sort of 6 months after the iPhone was announced. You know, there was a lot of skepticism, too. You know, there was a lot of the mainstream sort of tech media, or the mainstream media was very, very skeptical of the phone. You know, Apple's, you know, it's not a phone maker. It's not part of the industry. How are they going to compete with companies like Nokia, which were making, you know, billions of handsets? They were selling, you know, ginormous numbers of handsets, of phones. They really, really dominated the industry. And, of course, there was Sony and Sony Ericsson and RIM, you know, BlackBerry. That was the smartphone that had really taken off. And the criticism was that the Apple didn't have a hard keyboard.
Yeah, I remember Ballmer, didn't he? Steve Ballmer came out immediately after it was announced and just laughed outrageously, right, saying, $500 iPhone, you know, $500 for a phone, who wants that? And there's not even a keyboard, which makes it a useless phone for email, as he said.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that was definitely, I think that was the consensus from, you know, the sort of the tech industry that the lack of a keyboard would doom it, because that's what people did. Yeah, it had to have a keyboard. That was the thinking at the time. And of course the stylus as well. People were really upset that it didn't have and the other thing was a removable battery.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people were really saying that the lack of a removable battery was going to kill it, because people were used to carrying a couple of batteries to swap out. Yeah, so there was a lot of people were, you know, Ballmer's opinion, I don't think, was, you know, it was kind of a mainstream opinion, I think. People thought that, it would do okay, but it would be, you know, at that price point, because they were giving away phones, you know, you would get a free phone if you just signed up for a new plan. And the fact that Apple was going to be charging $600 for the phone was seen as, you know, suicidal, crazy, mad. Who's going to pay for that? But, of course, it sold like hotcakes.
So there you go. You know, even ending with, you know, the fact that some people didn't think it was going to be a success whatsoever, like as we were saying earlier, the fact that Ballmer came out and just said this is an absolute shambles.
And Nokia as well.
Exactly, yeah. It's going to have, you know, the fact that it didn't have a hard keyboard, the fact that it didn't have a removable battery, all of these things, they say, like, this is going to be an utter failure.
Well, there's some people still moan about those things, so, you know, it's fine. I mean, I remember, actually, because I queued up for the first iPhone as well here in London at Regent Street. And this was back when I just moved to London, actually. And I remember being interviewed by CNET, of all people, who I went to go and work there later on. But it was just fascinating.
Is that how you got the job?
How I got the job, no. But it was fascinating, because just the media circus of it was just absolutely insane. There were just like TV crews, and like you were getting papped as you walked in when you were by the till, like buying this thing. It was just insane. Like, I don't think we'll ever see that again.
Well, you certainly didn't see it at the launch of the watch, that's for sure.
No.
There was pandemonium for all of about 30 seconds. And then,
and then
there was no one
there.
But anyway, fantastic. So anyway, you looks like you've got a surprise
for
us.
I've got a surprise for you guys. I'm going to get my special bit of paper, which you're not allowed to look
at. All right. Okay. All right.
So I prepared a special quiz to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. They are questions about, from the whole 10 years, they're not too hard.
I'm not going to know any of the answers.
Well, let's start with the first one.
I mean, Jeremy is like the fanboy. Can we just give it to him?
No,
already?
I'm not. Oh, no, quite. I'm not. That's that. Okay, I take umbrage on that.
You take umbrage at everything.
I do. It's my USP, for Christ's sake.
I know, really.
Can I just say, you've also lucked out because my forfeits didn't arrive. So,
oh, God.
You played Bean Boozled before. The weird jelly beans.
No.
You've not played
them. Oh, is that the ones with the disgusting flavours?
Wait a minute, flavors.
So I could have skipped every... Oh,
so
right.
So if you got a question wrong...
Oh, no, but some are chilly.
Some are lovely and some are like chilly. Some are like, you know, baby's napkins.
It's like
that's the literal flavour.
The confectionery version of Beer Hunter.
Yeah. They're gross, but in a good way. Anyway, let's crack on. So the first one is, before the first iPhone was announced, it had a confidential code name, so employees didn't accidentally spill the beans on the secret project. What was the nickname? And these are multiple choice. So A, Project Shanghai, B, Project Purple, C, the Manhattan Project, or D, Project K-48.
Right.
Go on, you've got
it. You know.
Actually, this is great radio. This is great radio because Liette's actually got her hand up.
It's your turn. This might be one I know because it's the headline of one of our stories.
Oh, yeah.
Project Purple.
That is correct. Mark. Well done. Yeah, so this was when Apple was keeping the phone so secret that they basically had a separate floor of the Apple offices that employees could only access with special key cards and going via special security cameras.
That's right.
Supposedly, there was a first rule of Project Purple, is you do not talk about Project
Purple
posted up on the doors
as well.
Thanks,
Fight Club, for
making
Apple cool.
So, George Hotz, the now infamous hacker, made his name by hacking into the PlayStation 3 and unlocking the first iPhone. But what did he trade his first unlocked iPhone for?
Another iPhone?
Was it?
I've never heard this story.
It's true. So, a meeting with Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, a PlayStation 3 and 10 games, a 3-day bender in Vegas, or a sports car and 3 iPhones.
Wait, what was he trading? He was trading.
So he was the guy that unlocked the first iPhone, so you could use it on any carrier. Yeah. And someone offered him an exchange.
Oh right, okay, sorry. So I thought he was blackmailing Apple.
No. He was offered. I was like, someone gave him money or whatever. Else.
I think it's sports car.
I'm just because I think it would be funnier if he went for the games.
Okay.
Another PS3.
Yeah, he needs more PS3.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, you are correct.
It's the sports car, is it?
Well, that's the best one. He's an idiot if he went for any of the others.
I can understand that.
So he got given a Nissan 350Z along with 3 more iPhones. So he gave 2 of the iPhones away to his friends.
I was nearly right.
You were nearly right. Which came from Ceritel founder Tony Dadone, apparently. It was a phone and battery repair company. So he just had some money knocking about.
This is hilarious.
Yeah.
Brilliant. That's great. I didn't know that. That's
he was
fantastic.
A very young teenager. I can't remember his exact age, but certainly he was very young at the time. So
he didn't get in trouble.
No, this was before university, in fact, and he Steve Wozniak congratulated him on it.
Oh my gosh, do you hear that, kids? Before university, you can hack whatever you want, no one's going to get it. They'll give you a sports car.
Yeah. I don't think you'd get away with that these days.
No, you wouldn't. You'd be like, Apple will be swooping in with the FBI behind them.
Exactly. All right, so question 3, which was the first iPhone to include a camera with a flash?
No idea.
Was it the iPhone 3GS, the iPhone 4, the 4S, or the 5?
Wait, say them again.
So was it the 3GS, the 4, the 4S, or the iPhone 5?
You know what's really embarrassing about this is that we've got a stats video going up today with this very information on it.
I've got no sense of time.
Damn it. 4S.
Okay, 4S.
That's what I was going
to
say.
You can both do 4S.
I think we're both wrong.
We're hedging our bets.
Okay, well, in fact, you are both wrong.
Yay! So was it the 4?
It was the 4. Oh.
It was the 4.
Was like,
damn it.
I was like, why? Oh, he threw that. That was a real red herring there, 4S.
My favourite designed iPhone.
I think it was still my favourite design. Yeah. I mean, the 4 was the first one to have a camera that was usable.
Yeah, yeah.
Realistically.
True.
I mean, when it came out, it was the best smartphone camera.
It was.
For a long time. And the 4S.
But it's just the design was light years ahead of anything else on the market, and it's still not been bettered, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, in Sorry, excuse me again.
And you're getting one if you win this quiz.
Yeah, you get an iPhone 4.
Okay, fantastic.
So in July 2007, what did Apple pay $1 million? For what did Apple pay $1 million to entrepreneur Michael Kovtak? Was it A, for the rights for the domain name iPhone.com, which he had owned since 1995, for delivering an early prototype of the iPhone, which had been lost by an employee back to Apple headquarters, C, for infringing the copyright of a phone design he had patented in 95, or something else, D, for the use of the phrase iPhone, which he trademarked in 1995.
Those are good multiple choice questions.
I want them all to be true.
That's hard. Yeah,
they could all be true, right? They all sound legit.
So, I think it could be for trademarking the last one, trademarking iPhone, because they desperately had a fight with iPlayer, with the BBC for the iPlayer, didn't they?
They
wanted
did.
iPlayer.
They had a lot of fights though.
But
they
lost with that iron one.
If you're basing that
exactly.
You're both wrong, I'm afraid.
Oh,
it was
God.
He actually owned iPhone.com.
No! That's
the other one I was going to... Honestly,
Wait. But you said he owned it from 95. So
'95.
He wanted it for an internet phone company he intended to set up, which was supposed to be similar to Skype, apparently.
That's
he just
funny.
Never got round to it.
No.
So
brilliant.
Yeah. So he got $1 million.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, it makes you rethink your career.
Well, I mean, you can be one of those trolls that buy domain names, but you actually...
You're too late.
There's a legal thing. You have to have bought it for a good reason. You can't just say, buy marksandspencer.com like that guy did when it lapsed and then be like, oh, give me money.
I wanted to launch a clothesline called marksandspencer.com. You just say that. How much proof do they need?
All right.
Take a punt.
Well, just put some socks on there, you know. Well, see, it's operating. That's it. It's legit.
Yeah.
It's legit.
Sorry, next one.
That's all right. Question 5. This is a really easy one. So which rock star's silhouette was featured in all iPhones, iPads and iPod Touches as the logo for the artist tab in the music player or iTunes? So was it A, Paul McCartney, B, Bono, C, Kurt Cobain or D, Bruce Springsteen?
I have no idea. I love that you said that's the easiest one.
This is well easy.
Bono, it must be Bono, surely.
It's Bono.
Yeah.
Of course
Bono.
It's Bono. Of course it's Bono. Who else is it going to be?
Exactly. It has to be.
A lot of...
I mean,
there you go.
Apple and Bono were like, you know, they were like that, weren't they?
Busy buddies,
They were.
Busy mates.
They've actually replaced him now. It's just a microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I was trying to picture it.
So they replaced him in 2015, apparently.
Oh, well.
So there you go.
Poor Bono.
Around about the time of... When did it happen? When did the U2 thing happen?
Checkwired.co.uk.
Okay, checkwired.co.uk.
That's right. You'll find out. Next
Bono
one.
Needs.
I haven't been keeping score, actually, but never mind.
We're all winners.
We're all losers.
Yeah.
Question 6. What was the first iPhone to use a lightning connector?
Ooh.
The iPhone 4S, the 5, the 5S, or the 6? This was a big deal at
5S,
the time.
5S.
Big deal. 5S.
5?
It was. It was the 5.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally.
So the
I didn't deserve that.
No. It's
fine. You did.
It was
an educated
guess. Didn't remember.
So before this, they were using the 30-pin dot connector, which every iPod had used before that, and was so ubiquitous in hotels and everywhere else that the uproar when they decided to switch to the lightning connector.
Mad that you still go into hotel rooms and there's still those bloody radios there.
Well,
with
they
the
supposedly operate
dock.
On a 10-year life cycle before they refurbish rooms and change stuff.
Oh, I didn't know
so
that.
Whenever this happens, it's a really big deal.
Okay.
Like they can't
change it for every bloody Apple design decision.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a business they're running, Jeremy.
Well, the tough part now is that they're still using the lightning connector and they've moved to USB-C on their laptops, which means they don't work together. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
God.
Clever.
So they may switch again. Who knows? Question 8. Here's slightly more tricky one. These last two are a little bit trickier. So what percentage of Apple's revenues came from the iPhone in 2016? Was it 40%, 50%, 60% or 70%? This is a rough estimate.
iPhone revenue.
Yeah.
Well, the iPod was 50% at its height.
It's a tough one.
60.
That's, was that C, 60?
60? You are correct. It is. Oh, yeah. It is 60%.
It's so, like when you're ordering wine. Don't go the biggest. Just go one step down.
Well, I mean, technically it was slightly more than 60, but yeah, 60%. So unfortunately, they've also had declining sales recently, but it still makes up a huge amount of their profit margin, which is why those declining sales in iPhone are so bad for them.
Well, you see, both with Android, actually, and iOS phones, you're seeing the percentage growth each year going down and down and down and down.
Yeah.
So they're definitely slowing. They're
still
growing.
They're not doing anything dramatically new each year. No. Whereas there was also a sweet period where every year it was...
You have to have one. You're seeing
the market consolidating. So, you know, you're seeing the dropouts of, like, Windows and the dropout of BlackBerry and the dropout of the other providers. So now you're getting a two-horse race.
Or someone's going to come out and do something amazing.
Like the...
none of us are expecting.
Was it the Essential Phone, I want to say?
Yeah, which is Android, of course.
They're working on a new OS. That's the plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I really hope that's a great phone.
it's only coming out in America, so sadly we won't see it over here for some time.
No.
Which is a shame. Also, Apple has sold over 1 billion iPhones at this point.
They have.
So, yeah. Far above that.
Way above that, apparently.
That was 2016's figure.
They won't confirm. Why would they not confirm that figure? That would be something you'd want to shout about, wouldn't it?
Because they haven't.
No, they have, but they've probably way over 1 billion.
Yeah,
they announced
1 billion officially, and they haven't updated
the exact figure yet.
Yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't. Okay, final question, and it is the hardest one. So in 2010, Gizmodo reported that it had paid $5,000 for a prototype of the iPhone 4, which was left in a bar by an Apple employee on his birthday. What was the name of the bar? Was it A, the Saddle Room, B, the Blacksmith, C, the Gourmet House, Stout, or D, Hooters? could be any of those. They're all legit. They're all actual bars. I looked them up. So the first one was the Saddle Room Bar.
I'm just going to take that for his ridiculous name.
Saddle Room, but not the House Stout one.
That's the most ridiculous.
The
Gourmet House Stout.
Like, I don't think it's Hooters. I don't think it's Hooters.
Maybe number three.
What was the
most sensible? Was that the
weird? Saddle Room Bar, the Blacksmith. Okay, I'll go Blacksmith.
You're
going to go Saddle Room, are you?
So, I mean, Saddle Room, what a name.
You should have gone for the Gourmet House Stout.
That was C.
So this was Apple engineer Gray Powell, who went to a bar in Redwood City, California, carrying a fourth gen iPhone with him, disguised in a case to make it look like a 3GS. It was his birthday.
What a James Bond move.
Oh, he got drunk on his birthday.
He left it there. And apparently a member of the bar picked it up. This is how it's recorded, whether, you know, some people say it might have been stolen, but, you know. So another member of the bar picked it up and ended up selling it to Gizmodo, which I believe was $5,000 plus some money, depending on how many views
the post
got. Whatever
happened to that employee?
So I did look that up, and his according to his LinkedIn, Gray Powell is still employed at Apple as a wireless QA engineer.
Yeah. That's nice of them.
Never entrusted with a secret iPhone.
He's not allowed outside, but it's fine. Yeah, it's fine now.
Well, that's brilliant. Okay, so I'm going to announce myself as the winner of that, even though it's probably
Jeremy.
Liat.
I think it was close.
I think it has to be Liat.
I think you should take yourself out of the running for that.
I think it's embarrassing. I have to go and fire myself for not doing better at that quiz. So that's all anyway from me, from Liat. And from Mark.
And myself.
Basically, don't forget to subscribe on the podcast and iTunes, and leave us a review if you like what you hear. Be nice. Come on, say nice things. We're doing this for you. And we'll see you next time. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.